Welcome,
All
welcome.
right.
Happy New Year, and welcome to another episode of the Colombian Catwoman podcast. And we continue our series of Black expats in Spain. So this is the first one for 2023. So I hope that you're well and you're fabulous. And New Year's resolutions, who cares about them? We're alive after the last 4 years. So we're grateful to be here. On
Very
today's
much so.
episode of Black Expats in Spain, we have Adaryl in the house. So welcome, Adaryl.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so my name's Jeanette. Welcome to the show. Would you like to tell us where you're from, a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into our show a little bit more as we go along.
Yeah, sure. My name's Adaryl. I am from North Carolina. I'm 47 years old. I'm living in Barcelona, Spain at the moment. I'm actually outside of the city in a little, well, not a little, but a town called Santeloni. Yeah, I've been here for quite a while, like maybe 15 plus years. I always say it feels like it's 20, but I think because a lot of it was back and forth in the beginning. But yeah, no, that's me. I'm in the tech world, I suppose, as a real job. And then in my personal world, I am a producer, DJ, and comic book writer.
Okay, so you're a man of many talents.
Yes, and my favorite thing is Dungeon Master, which nobody ever really wants to see, but it's as far as black guys go, it's a thing that I think we have to spotlight more about, because Dungeons and Dragons is life.
Okay, I'm not going to say that I do know what it is, but what I will say is I'm sure my brother, who's a little bit older than you, knows what it is. He and is a comic book fan and has been a comic book fan and a fan of that kind of world from our childhood and who created these comics.
Oh, cool. Because I mean, I think a lot of us, there's a lot of people who are like me or like us who were into it, but it's never like so many other things. If you had to go solely on what the visuals were, you'd assume there were no black people playing Dungeons and Dragons. Let alone dungeon mastering or running games, or organizing games, and writing stories. Like there's just another world that we just don't get the highlights on. So,
I might show you some of my brother's work afterwards, actually, because I think he has now kind of gone into writing comics, but from a very African perspective. So yeah, I might kind of share that link and see
Oh
maybe
yeah,
he does
definitely,
have something in common
definitely,
and want to do something in the future. So
absolutely, absolutely. That'd be great.
we've been there in that world, and we are there in that world, and we exist in many, many other worlds. So North Carolina to Barcelona, or just outside of Barcelona, what on earth made you make that change? What drove you to move from, I think, sunny North Carolina, would that be fair to say, to
Well, when it's sunny, it's sunny. It's really hot in North Carolina when it's hot. It's an ex a place of extremes, let's say that. I think initially just as an opportunity. My wife Anna is from here, and she pretty much we met in the US, and she was living back here, and I came and visited quite a few times before we got married, obviously. And I think from a prospect of mindset, I think the US was very crippling to a point of view. Like it was obviously early aughts. Things were still kind of complicated. I mean, it's always been complicated as a black man in America. I don't think that's any new news, but I'm not going to also be that guy going, oh, it's so hard being a black man. It's just hard being a man or a person in life. But that being said, I came to Spain and I experienced things in a very different way. There was a certain freedom I felt here that I did not feel in America, let
Okay.
alone in North Carolina. There was safety that I felt here, which was weird. And coming from a military family where, we're very pro on the security and the freedoms, and I just experienced them in a different way. And I just thought it was an opportunity to be here, so I took it. And I kind of just never went back.
So you are a veteran black expat here in Spain. Have you always lived in Barcelona, or
Yeah,
did
I think
that mean?
so. No, pretty much all in Barcelona. I mean, I've traveled a bit and, you know, going and seeing different places. I've visited Eastern Europe for a while, and you know, but no, living here has been Barcelona pretty much the whole time.
So is that
But
because
I traveled a lot.
Is that because your wife's family's from the region? Is that kind of what the connection is to Barcelona, or is it just like it's the best?
Yeah. No, no, solely because her family is actually here from San Simone, but she lived in Barcelona. And I was actually quite fascinated with Barcelona, which, you know, was ironic. Even before I met her, I've had friends from Barcelona. I've met Catalan friends. So I was curious from a historical point of view. And honestly, the Olympics kind of put me on to Barcelona as a kid. It's one of those eureka moments, aha moments. I was watching the Olympics and I just thought that place seems fascinating.
Okay. I vaguely remember.
And from
that.
An artistic point of view, there was just a lot of history, you know.
Okay. Which is true. So, how would you say that you've changed? You've been in the country for 15 plus years. How would you say that you've changed as a result of kind of living in a Spanish speaking country for, you know, the last decade and a half?
That's a good question, actually. I've never thought about it. I think the most obvious thing I can think of, and in light of what we were speaking about earlier, most recently, I realized that I've relaxed.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest change. I've gotten, some would say, too comfortable. In my mind, I found my lifestyle, Overwatch mentality, where I'm always just like on edge, always expecting the worst, always expecting every experience to be racially charged or something. Now, not to say that it doesn't happen here, because clearly it does.
Race relations in Spain.
But again, it's just... on that, so as a veteran, I'm going to say I don't know that it's race relations as much as it is class relations.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Personally, this is my point of view. Now, obviously, I'm speaking from a bit of a privileged place, which is odd as a Black man. But let's just say, for the sake of the argument, you go into a situation here, and obviously, I have very, very strong African ties in my family. My father's family is Zulu. My grandmother's, his mother is also part, their family's Pygmy. So we have a lot of like strong African, Nigerian, Haitian, like on my dad's side, it's very, very thick bloodline. So obviously, I look like a lot of the tribes here. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know this. I only know this because this is what I get from people on the street. Mm-hmm. When you just see elders come up to you and they just talk to you without a thought.
Okay.
And then you have to go, no, wait, sorry, I'm American. I don't understand. And then you go, oh, now that's one thing that is an interesting dynamic. But then when you get it from non-Black people who assume you're African, mm-hmm. they might come at you somewhere, and this is why I say it's not race, and it is race. Like let's not be fooled, right? Mm-hmm. It is, but layers, right? So once they go, oh, where are you from? And then some of them go, oh, you're obviously American because of your style, your whatever, and it changes, mm-hmm. right? Because I've seen the same behavior to people who are from Africa or from places, and they get treated a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I found myself in a similar position. And the minute they realize I'm not African, or they realize that I'm American, more so American than not African, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
So what is the difference?
Like just because I'm American, I don't...
What is the difference?
They become more open. Mm-hmm. They're more open. It becomes more like, oh, okay, oh. You know, like that classism has a different value than the race does, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Just kind of, I want you to maybe elaborate on that a little bit more, because also then when people don't know that you're American, how do they treat you? So if we're talking about
that's the thing. What is the thing? Like, it's one of these things. I think you really just got to experience it to know you're experiencing it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gestures, sort very subtle things, the way they respond to you, the way they the amount of attention they actually give you, mm-hmm. Even from jump. Like you walk into a place, the way they respond to you, the way they talk to you. In my work, when I was working in tech, you would see it. I would travel to different places and they would be very surprised. Like they see the name of Daryl Grant and that name doesn't really connotate anything one way or the other. So when I show up, here's this 6'2", 300-pound black man with dreads, right? It's this giant gorilla of a man. I'm just like, that's not what we expected. And it's the initial 30 seconds of like processing. How do I respond? What do I, you know? And then once you start talking, yeah. You're doing the math. And then once they, you know, you get into those initial, oh, okay, where, tell me where you run, but. And then you go, oh, I'm from the U.S. Oh, okay, yeah, I love New York. I love Manhattan. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm from North Carolina. Where? I grew up in Brooklyn. I got family, you know, this, that. Yeah, you know what? None of this matters. Why are we talking about this? But it becomes their entry level, you know, to say, hey, I know you. I know you as a person. And again, this is where it sounds racially motivated, but I don't think that it is. They go, I love hip hop. I love this. I love that. Because that, to me, has moved out of the sphere of race to a place of culture. So they feel like, oh, I can enter this conversation. It's not because you're black. I do like this as a thing. Whereas if I was just purely African, I have friends who are Nigerian, I have buddies who I hang out with from Ghana, and we go out for the dinner into restaurants. And sometimes, you know, they get a real weird reaction. But then they flip the script because then they speak Spanish fluently because this is closer to their home. So they all speak the language perfectly. And then, you know, they get a different experience than I get sometimes because I can't always speak fluently. So there's all these cultural borders or classist borders that I think we often misquote for racial, if that makes sense. I'm not saying it's not there, but I think sometimes it's more class than race.
From your perspective and your opinion, and they're valid. So like, it's not for me to say yes or no. Those
are your opinions.
And your perspective and your views and the way that you see it. And like, I don't have to agree, neither disagree. So I understand what you're saying when people, you know, acknowledge the fact that you're not from Africa. You're not one of them. You're from America. Yeah. So then you become cool. Then it becomes okay. Then there's interest in you. And I understand that as a, you know, a person from the UK that wants kind of the questions of kind of, you know, we've gone through the 20 questions and then.
Right.
Then, you know, are you from the UK? Then it's okay to kind of like, then you're cool, then you're okay. But right. I understand, you know, the experiences, but I just wanted to have your perspective on it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And on a side note, or even parallel to that, is my daughter who's 13, who for all intents and purposes is as Catalan as they come. She's from a small town. Her mom was Catalan. She grew up, you know, she's Catalan. She's from here. She's Barcelona. Mm-hmm. She had been to America until she was maybe old enough to remember. Like we went to New York this summer, past summer. Was really the first time I think she experienced New York as a fully formed person. But I think I experienced it through her point of view a lot of times too here, because we live in a small town. It is not exactly as inclusive or as it would like. There's multicultural, but it also exists in their own spheres. Mm-hmm. Now, my daughter, much like me, is a tall girl, very, you know, she's 13. Very fair, very light skinned, curly hair, but on a visual spectrum, people just assume she's from Morocco because that's what Moroccan kids look like.
And because that's what they know and understand and recognize, and they don't know how the world works.
Right. But even for my kid, a small town where we all know each other, you know, she finds herself navigating that in a way that I never really experienced it. Because she doesn't look like the Catalan girls. Or Spanish girls. She doesn't like the Latin girls. She looks like the Moroccan girls, but she's not. So she's not really in any of the groups, although she looks like all of the groups and they all love her. But at the same time, she still feels like an outsider in her own place at times. And I think it's that same class. Yeah, she's born here. Yeah. But when we went to the US, the first thing I noticed was like, you know, we went shopping and I was in the airport or it was in Target or somewhere. Just a couple of different moments. But I remember her just looking and going, wow, these people look like me. And I just really hadn't thought about it until I got it from her perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said it was cultural more than it was race. Because in her mind, a race didn't exist. Right? So the racial things, like I get torn by that because I don't know if it exists because we're labeling it, or we're labeling it because it exists, or one thing or the other. And I say that because in my previous job, I've just experienced some things that I have to go. Things felt racist, right? But was it really racist? The little things, just interactions with people. And I just say that door goes both ways. I have to really question, how do I label it, if that makes sense? And I do it more here than I would in the US,
Because
if
they're
that makes
packaged in
sense.
different ways, I would imagine.
Exactly.
So there are different things. One is, I think that we have to label everything to understand what it is. Not to say that that label doesn't necessarily change at a certain stage. We might start off with X label and it might become Y label, but we have to kind of give something a name to be able to say it's that or it's not that. And that's what I think. And then, so microaggressions. It's what it sounds like to me that you're experiencing, and then you're having to go like, is that about race or is that because of this? Is that because of that reason? And so, coming from the UK, I would say that microaggressions are done in such a brilliant way. The English Empire, they were the kings and queens of microaggressions. The point that you drive yourself mad, thinking like that it's me, that I'm the crazy one, that I'm the wrong one, that I'm the this, that, the other, and then we're having these discussions now in the world about. For me, anyway, about race and relations and interactions and so on. Now we understand that all those microaggressions that fucked with us in different ways on a daily basis, going for the job, going for this, that, the other. And like we can say, oh, it's actually that,
Definitely,
or it's
especially in
this.
jobs. Yeah, especially in jobs. I think I realized that very recently. Again, we were saying before we went on record live. I'm just processing a lot of things personally, trying to figure out where I stand on things. For a lot of jobs I've worked in, I've been the only black guy in the building,
How
or one
has
of
that made you
three or
feel,
four.
and how did you feel in those environments? Because it can be you're the only X or Y, but like it's no big deal in it, or it can be many other different things. So.
It's multifaceted. I think a lot of time is more in my head than it is in the world, but at the same time, people want to respond to it. I have a joke that I say to a lot of my friends back home. We joke about it here, and it's probably not a nice joke, but it's also kind of real. I feel like you run into a lot of people, and they're going, "I really want a black friend." Right? This is their experiences. They're not for their lack of trying. They just did not have it, So now they're more acquiesced to, like, oh, they're running up on you. They're really experiencing or trying to live out what is in their mind, and it seems wrong, but you got to think about it. Like, they don't know, so they're doing the same thing. And then it's just not black either, right? Because it's almost like a status quo now where every girl's got a gay friend. So you see these in various, rotations, and it's just a group of people that have not had access to other areas, and then you see it. But at the same time, in the workplace where you see the black guys gravitate to each other, and it was just like, oh, I get these guys, but we're all totally different. We would probably never hang out in a normal scenario. But in this scenario, we gravitate to each other. So again, my question, is it race or is it cultural? Like, I don't know which one it is.
That's for the maybe the sociologist or something like that to answer. I definitely am not one, and so I can give my tuppence worth. So, do you feel cool being the only black person? Was it that you didn't feel that it was an issue in your environment, and you had a great time and colour kind of or race or class wasn't an issue? I know that you've said it's multifaceted, but I don't know if you can pinpoint like in that particular culture or that particular city or that particular job, I felt.
Yeah, there's some different. Okay, so for example, I was working in a bunch of different places. I've traveled a lot for different jobs for different reasons. I was in Eastern Europe, and it did not register. Like, that place, even though I was the only black guy that I could see, there was nobody was really tripping over, just like just another dude,
You're
which was
saying
really surprising for me.
Eastern Europe, one Eastern Europe is a region, so maybe be a bit more specific about the country or countries, and then
Okay,
maybe
so
compared to Spain.
specifically, let's say Slovakia for particulars right now. in this conversation. I've got our friends from Slovakia, from Czech Republic, in that area, of, or even next door to Vienna. So I've got friends, brown friends, and friends from there. And you go, and I just, it doesn't really register like I thought it would in some places. I was in Paris, didn't register, right? Everybody's black and brown and mixed, and you know, they have French problems, not color problems, if that makes sense.
They have lots of problems in France, so that's a whole other story.
It's weird. It's weird. No, it is. It is. But I'm saying on the surface, though, right? Right? Just walking around as a black man in France. I'm a black man in France. In Paris. Now, I know that's contradictory. I know that. But I don't know that it is what we think it is.
So I don't know whether you can compare Paris to Barcelona. Barcelona, and then also the fact that you live in a village which is outside of the big city.
Mm-hmm.
Barcelona is known as the, you know, one of the, or the most progressive city in Spain.
Yeah, it is. It
they
is.
Consider themselves to not be Spanish because they're so forward thinking, is what they say. And so they kind of want to, you know, free themselves from the rest of Spain because their economy is so much stronger and all the rest of it. So you've, like,
well,
in work environments, everything was cool.
That's a podcast in itself. But
not
okay,
for me, but not for me.
So on a political note, I would say, yeah, no, I know. This is why these are great conversations to have. I would say there's a distinct difference between Catalan society and Spanish society.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I would definitely say the same thing.
Now, I'm not on both sides. They're distinctly different. Now, if you get into politics, if should they, shouldn't they, that's somebody else's argument. I don't really care. But I do say that the differences do exist. They're cultural, they're people differences. They're just differences. Now, as far as Barcelona as a city goes, I don't buy into a lot of the nonsense I hear. Because to me, Barcelona, Madrid, Manhattan, these are universal anywheres. Like, you could be outside, you take the language away, it's the same city.
To a certain degree, I agree with you. Cities, cosmopolitan cities.
You go to Manhattan, it's the same. You know what I mean?
To a certain degree, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you take the language out of it. You take the language out of it, it's like, I could be anywhere. Like, you know, they all got McDonald's. They all got Burger King. They all got Subway. We all doing the same. It's just, it's meant to make it. It's a Starbucks city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all got to get the same thing no matter what city we go to. So you see the difference when you get outside of the cities, you know. So that's what I was like. People go, oh, it's so forward thing. Like, yeah, it's kind of just like everywhere else, though.
Which you understand more that you travel. So for you living in Barcelona, as you said, it as a 6-foot-plus, 300, I think you said, pound man, like, you haven't had issues to deal with.
A big guy.
Which, and I'm a big woman too. So for you, you felt comfortable everywhere that you've gone in work environments. And would you say that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like, okay, so if I'm home and I walk, if the cops roll up on me, if I get near police, I go to a different place. My brain goes into a different response.
Mm-hmm.
I see police. My brain is like, okay, we got to approach this current situation however we need to. And I don't have that here. I don't have that fear or thought or reality.
So the police aren't really the big thing, I think, in Europe as a whole. We don't see them in the same way that they're seen and perceived and felt and experienced in the States. But what I want to ask you is, even after having been in Spain, in Europe for almost 2 decades, you still automatically go back to that kind of defensive place or mechanism and protective place of protection.
Oh, yeah.
In the States, you automatically, like, just jump back into it. It's like
2 seconds off the 10 minutes on the ground, my brain's back into like, nah, we're not doing it. Nah, you know, the mentality is safe coded, hard coded into the brain. It's just like, that's
your neck.
Yeah.
As Wu-Tang said.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Protect your neck. Just like, you be out here, you just got to respond to it. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't happen anywhere else or would happen anywhere else. I just, it's just different. You know, it's a very different mentality.
So back to
and you. You know, at the same time, you it's weird.
It's not a great life to live that you have to kind of go back to being on guard no matter how long you've been away. And it's the reality of life back in the States for people that, you know, you have to,
you think about it, and again, and this is something I try to explain to my daughter a lot. And when we go home, and she's like, "You're weird, you're different." She knows, she sees it, and I'm like, "Look, sweetie, we hear, and you watch it on TV." Now she sees, we're watching TV. She's starting to break the code. I'm explaining to her like, you know, there's things you got to see and you got to understand what you're looking at. Like when I'm in the U.S., I am the guy. I'm 6'2", I'm dark skin, I got dreads, I'm big. Like, I'm the guy they always say, the bad guy, right? You know what I mean? You see people write up stuff, and you're like, damn, is that me? Because you see the description, like, that's me. Like,
but you don't feel that way, and you haven't been made to feel that way in Europe, shall we say?
No, never, never.
Which is great.
Yeah, it is.
A couple of things. How was... Your family or your wife's family are from, okay, in the most progressive, in inverted commas, part of Spain, so from Catalonia. How did your wife's family receive you and perceive you?
Oh, they were great. Right out of the gate, they were great. I mean, there were questions, obviously, but...
kind of questions that you would ask, like, are you going to look after my daughter questions, or, you know, what do you mean by questions?
No, just questions of, like, personality, of like, where are you from, what they, because it's, again, it's this, they only know what they've seen on television. Mm-hmm. So to have one person that fits the spokesperson for everything they've ever seen, mm-hmm. you know, you're just having these conversations. And so funny story is my father-in-law, my dad never met him. My mom, they got on really well, but I feel like there's a world where if my dad ever had lived and made it here and met her father, they'd be best friends.
Okay, that's cool.
Because culturally, if it was a Pepsi Coke taste test, they'd be the selection of black music.
Right.
Yeah, like his musical knowledge is so Motown, and so it just, he didn't see race. It's just he loved the music. He was it.
And then had an understanding of the culture as well.
Yeah. But from a very foreign point of view, right? Like it's hard to explain it. Like, there were no expectations.
It was just my daughter.
It's really hard to explain.
A guy happens to be black. Let's just get to know him. And questions that were asked were like normal types of questions. And you welcomed by the family. It was a good experience for you.
Yeah. And there was obviously parts of the family maybe who were not, they just didn't really know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the same time now, we're thick as thieves. Like, I feel like sometimes they're more my family than my family is. You know, but like, you know, like her father, you know what I mean? Like, me and him get on real well. And it's like, he's like my dad. Like my dad, right? Like,
supposed to be, isn't it? You know, that he's supposed to look out for you and
yeah, but no, no, but no, no, I'm not saying like that. No, I mean, like, he is my dad. Like, they are the same person, mm-hmm. right? Like, they have the same mannerisms, the same likes. Like, just gonna go watch cowboy pictures on Sunday because, you know, that's again, like, that's just a cultural thing or a personal thing. I find it fascinating. I don't know how to explain it. Which is funny because, you know, my wife goes, when we met, you're so much like my dad, which I think happens in every
relationships, in most hetero relationships, definitely.
In most relationships. Yeah. You find somebody that you feel familiar and comfortable with. Mm-hmm. That's just psychology and everything. But when I met him, I go, wow, we are quite a lot alike, you know. Now, that being said, the funniest story that I have is I'm from the South. Right, I'm from the U.S. My favorite drink is Southern Comfort. I don't know if you know what that is.
It's an alcoholic drink that I'm not a fan of. It's a weird place. Yeah, I'm okay, not a fan of
right,
it.
Right.
Spices.
It's a weird place because it's not even a thing. Yeah, exactly. It's very like Southern Cajun. It's one of those very eclectic things. When I moved here, her grandfather was this old man who was like, the first thing he's like, "Do you speak French? Do you speak Catalan?" No. And so we just had to get on by not knowing how to talk to each other. He passed away. We went to his place. He went through, he had a mirror on his wall. One of his favorite things was like a Southern Comfort mirror. And it's like we saw it. And I kept this here. And I just think, how funny is that? From a man culturally, we just didn't get on. We didn't understand each other, but we share the same taste in drinks. Now, that might not mean a lot to some people, but
But
to
it's a
me,
sign,
as a
isn't it?
drinker, as a person who goes out, it is. It goes, are we really that different?
It depends on what the differences
We
are,
had the
but there are
same
lots of things where you feel
taste in
comfortable.
whiskey, the same taste in drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always joke. I DJ a lot, and I go out and say, and I know that there's so many things that people have issue with in that statement. But let me say, once you put two people down and they have a drink between each other, conversation comes, and out of conversation comes understanding. And I feel like it breaks the balance between people. If you just sit and break bread with a person, it changes everything. And that's been my experience throughout my travels. Everywhere I've gone and I've met people, my Instagram, my social media is just through the roof because of random encounters with people from around the world. And I love it. And it's all because that you just sat down and you talked to somebody and you realize you're really not that different.
We do, as human beings, we have more in common than not once you start to get to know people and so on. What would you say to the black expats, English speaking expats who are thinking about relocating to Spain? I don't know if you can talk about Spain as a whole or if you feel more comfortable just talking about your region. What would you say to them?
I'd say you should definitely do it. I mean, if you have the ability to do it, and you find yourself financially capable, yeah.
Any specifics?
And to be a bit political, I think definitely pick up a little bit of Catalan. I think it goes a long way. Way to changing people's mindsets. And it's around the world anywhere, but especially in places like France and Paris or in Barcelona, a place where you if you show the effort of trying to speak their language, you'll find more times than not they'll be more apt to open up to you.
So the advice you'd give them is
Culturally, I think people should come.
the culture. So if they can financially learn some of the language, is there anything else that, advice-wise you would give to fellow black expats that are thinking about visiting or relocating to Barcelona, to Catalonia, or to Spain as a
Yes.
whole?
Yeah. Or in general, just remember this ain't where you left. And there's a reason why you left where you left. So experience the things that are there. Right. I meet so many people who have traveled and they've come here and they've just like relocated themselves. And I'm like, let's go here. No, I don't do that. What do you mean you don't do that? Why would you come here? Well, I don't eat that. Why would you mean you don't eat that? Why even bother? Right. Why would you leave a place to go to a place and not do the things they do in that place? Like, I don't understand that mentality.
Well, but there are plenty of Brits, and I'm a Brit myself, but plenty of Brits that come to Spain, and I'm sure you're on the mainland, you've seen them, they kind of formulate, and Germans as well, blend communities and don't interact and don't read
No,
and
absolutely.
don't.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm involved and invited to those communities, and I don't really even, I mean, I'm a part of the expat community. I'm trying to be all in with that because it's like we ain't got Irish pubs and some or different English pubs and like you just get these mentalities and some people are like, no, we're here because everybody speaks English. I'm like, yeah, but maybe we should go to the other bar. I know it's gonna be complicated. I know we might get looked at funny. I know it might not be great. You just gotta go to another one and another one and another one. You know what I mean? I think that if you travel to another country, you should experience that country. There's gonna be some bad because it's different, but I think you really gotta just put the effort in to enjoy where you are. Okay. That's my only advice is really, if you go somewhere, be there.
I'm about that. I'm definitely about that. Try as much as you can, as much as you feel comfortable with. But I'm not down for trying everything. Sheep's eyes, all the rest of it in countries. I'm not down.
Not everything.
It's whatever.
I'm not saying do it all, but yeah, exactly. Like that should just be the rule, period. Just do what you're comfortable doing, period. In life, yeah. At home, out, wherever, just be comfortable and everything else will be easier.
A couple of questions. Sorry, I just don't think I understood or I asked you this question. So at the moment, are you working? And if you are you working for yourself or are you working for a company?
For the first time in like the 15 years I've been here, I'm really not working, but it's only been for like 2 weeks now. And I've got a bunch of interviews I've been through. I just haven't found, my problem is right now is figuring out what I really want to do.
I think the whole world is going through that post-pandemic. It's, you know, what do I want? Where do I want? Et cetera, et cetera. So those are questions that, you know, large percentages of the world are fortunate enough to be in that position are asking themselves, you know, mass resignations. In the States in particular and in the UK, people are not wanting to do what they've always done because they've always done it because people are understanding that life is valuable and precious. And...
Well, it changed. I mean, it changed. Like, you know, the hybrid mentality here is like, you know, I live an hour outside of the city. By an American terms, that's not a big deal. By terms here, people, you travel an hour to Barcelona to work every day. And then I've been here long and I'm like, well, you know what, maybe it is. And then I'm like, today I'm working from home. I have a better setup in my house than I do in any office. So you have to ask yourself,
what's the value?
If I need to go to an office to do the job that I could do here, what's the value? So you just, I think we're all in a place of like expanding reflection. And asking ourselves these difficult questions.
There's a lot of reflection going on.
And I think we have to. I think. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we worked in companies, we got to really think about what is the value of going into an office every ship, you know, status. But at the same time, you might be better off not dealing with these people every day. You might be better off getting your work done at home and just turning it off for your own mental health.
So at the moment, you're maybe questioning and looking at the best fit for yourself. Like, that's cool. There are lots of people doing that. You speak Spanish and do you speak Catalan?
I speak Catalan decently. I mean, some people think I speak it really well. I know that there's a limit to how well it is. I get by. Mm-hmm. I can function. My Spanish is so-so. My French is so-so. You know, just enough to get, like I said, I speak just enough to get the door open to get into the conversation.
Because I'm asking from like
but a I work should speak perspective. More.
So when you look for work in the city or wherever it is that you do look for work or have worked, have you had to speak Catalan? Have you had to speak Castilian Spanish? Have you, like, English is one thing, obviously it's your native tongue.
I think I've been lucky. Back to the reflection point, right? Like I have been lucky enough to have jobs where I've just had to speak English for 20 years, right? I've not. And I tell people, you could literally live here and never speak the language. You could. It is totally possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that really what you want to do? No, even in the small cities. I mean, even out here, like I walk with my headphones on. I go in, I can be in my own little world. But
sorry, my internet connection's not great. It keeps on breaking up. But what did you say? You go out with your headphones on and you said that you could be in your own world. Is that what you said?
Yeah, you could be in my own. You could be, I mean, I go out and I don't have to speak to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to interact. Now, if you need to go do things that are on a financial or paperwork level, you need me, obviously, you know,
have you been able to navigate, because Spain is famous for its bureaucracy, or do you get your wife to, you know, this needs to be done, can you help me, can you come, or have you been able to navigate systems on your own?
No, I've been able to. I mean, she has been a world high. I would never have been able to do it without her friends or connections that we both have, or I have. But that being said, it could be done without it. It would just be way more complicated.
Definitely. Okay, that's cool.
Anytime you have somebody to give you inside view, it's definitely easier.
It's not just that, I mean, obviously you got the hookup because you've married a Catalonian person, so you got like that's cool, but when it comes to doing things, you could be married, but then you could be totally self-sufficient when it comes to, you know, dealing with town hall or, you know, paperwork or phone calls or whatever, or you could not be, depending on your level of comfort, your abilities, skill set, et cetera, et cetera.
So, even for me, I can function fine if I go out in person. I still have a very hard time with phone calls. If I can't see the person, I have a very hard time understanding them.
Well, I speak Spanish, but let me just say one of the first times that I actually came to Spain on my year abroad, which is almost 20 years ago, I was looking for a place to rent a room on my Erasmus year. And at the time, like my hearing skills weren't tuned. And so I was on the street putting money into a payphone. You know how old I'm talking about, how long ago I'm talking about putting money into a payphone and just like grabbing people. Yeah. Can you help me? What are they saying? Can you write it down?
Yeah.
And I remember like people were very, very friendly and very kind. This was in Malaga City. And like I couldn't understand what people were saying to me on the phone. It was so difficult. And you know, there were times when it's still the case, but
yeah.
That's how I managed to deal with the situation.
So do you find it hard as a black person or person of color or whatever the appropriate play a factor for you?
My internet connection.
Trying to find an apartment or anything. Huh.
Can you ask that question again, please?
Yeah, did you find it as a person of color, a black person, whatever the appropriate term is, did you find it complicated or do you find it complicated to find an apartment or to find things? Do you think it goes?
We're talking about 20 years ago. I'd say that things were very different in Spain 20 years ago. And today, I would say, yes, it definitely is a factor. And it's something that I'm not looking forward to. And if I have to do it here, when the time comes, it's not something I'm looking forward to, just because I do believe class is one thing, because money can get you out and get you in, you know, number of doors and situations, but also race, relations, education, which is part of race, et cetera, et cetera, in my opinion, or, you know, racism, et cetera. And so, yes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I do believe it will be a huge factor, but being British is a bonus. And so, you know, I understand those things, but I do believe it will be a factor when the time comes.
Well, it's definitely going to be a factor. Again, like I said, there's no denying it. Again, it's just like you said, it's the labels. I my curiosity to that is because I visited the UK a few times, and there were places where I really thought I was given the impression I might experience more racism than I did, or in different ways than I did. But at the same time, I went to parts of London that was very black.
So, as I said at the start, the UK is great for fucking with your mind. Like, people will smile, people will do things, everything will be great. And you'll be like, but something was wrong and I don't know why. But, like, mechanically, everything was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to put their knee on your neck or take a gun at, like, not as an adult. You know, those things aren't going to happen. But the UK people will fuck with your mind.
Yeah, like you said, the microaggressions.
Yeah, perfect. Perfection, it came, the shit came from there and continues there. And
Yeah.
As an example, like Meghan could not run away from the country. Not that she's the example or not, but just, you know, within her own family, you know, the UK does a great job fucking with your mind.
Which threw me for a curve, because I'm like, she ain't even...
That dark. And imagine if she was.
Come on.
You're okay until you're not okay in the UK. And then once you're not okay, once things aren't okay, once, you know, then there's no going back, then.
So, okay, so let me ask you a question. You're an educated woman. We're on the same age wavelength. Like,
we are exactly the same age. We were born probably in the same year. We are the exact same.
Oh, really? All right, so I was born in April 75.
75 is my year as well. I'm not going to say my birthday, but
okay.
Is my year as well.
All right.
Fine year.
Yes, very, very good. Yeah. So here's my thing. me and my friends, and this is like I said, I feel like we can have a lot of conversations. I feel like I really can build with you so many different things. Me and my friends, as writers, we talk about things. And I'm explaining to my daughter now, and I think I'm seeing it more now than I've ever seen it, is the inclusion in media. Now, I'm not a light-skinned guy. We're you know, I'm not yellow, as they say back home. I'm not a red bone.
Red bone and...
Yeah, red, you know, all these things, whatever. But I have a classification which I like to call TV black.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how dark... In the UK, maybe it's different. I don't know. But I feel like... Because I see more dark people or brown people or not that certain look. Like, I tease my daughter saying now, it's her time. Because everybody looks like her on TV now. Their light skin, curly hair could kind of be... But they have to be all the black characters. Right? So my question is, do you see it where everybody's not just the yellow representation of black people on television?
You're asking me about the UK media specifically.
In general, but I guess I'm asking specifically the UK, because I guess that's something you can see more than I do.
I would say that.
But do you see it in your mind?
Things are changing. The UK is slow to adapt and to move with the times and behind in lots of ways. But I will say that definitely local news or DJs or radio or programs, you'll see now, you know, black people generally relaxed hair, generally, you know, a particular weight, generally a particular, you know, stable body, particular size. The UK as a whole is quite a conservative country. So that's kind of as a whole. But in terms of tonality, so skin tones, that's changing, but not like there's an abundance. There's one program that I can think of, which is called Loose Women. And so the talk show, we've got like those American talk shows. I can't think of the one with Jenny Mai. She's on it. The View or the one. And, you know, so that's like got specifically, you know, she's Vietnamese American. And so there's one program that's kind of equivalent to that in the UK, Loose Women, it's called, where, you know, you have days where there are like three women of color on it, but it's still quite, you know, relaxed hair, or, you know, it's not, you know, of a certain type of look, still quite conservative, but things are changing, but not enough. But
I just find it curious.
We aren't at the viewers yet. Let's just say that we aren't at the View. There's no, you know, black, mixed race, Mexican, Latin. You know, we don't have that kind of, you know, and discussion and ability to move up the ranks and en masse. And also, we're a minority in a way in the UK that it's so difficult to compare to the US. And it's a bugbear of mine, because we are like less than 10% of the population in the UK, maybe like 5%, maybe it's gone up to that, maybe in between 5 and 10. And so, you know, in mass in the bigger cities, so there's only going to be so many opportunities in the bigger cities, but, you know, comparing it to the US, which is like huge, blah, 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 blah. So that answers your question.
Okay. Okay. I find it fascinating, because as a writer, I'm writing stories. I do comics, and I do like write stuff for television. We do different things we want to like produce. And I always like to think about who would I cast for different roles. And I think about what I watch on TV and what I really enjoy on TV. And I think, wow, you know, like I think what really started my conversation was when they redid the show about the witches, the three witches.
So I know that show. I'm not sure if I'm familiar with that.
Well, and it was just different shows where they've redone it now. They've kind of gave it black cast. And I'm like, that would be genius if it was done culturally correct and not just color washing.
And that's kind of, you know, it's like, oh, we didn't think about it before, so now we're just going to put some black characters into this, or put, you know, it's not like a bigger thought and more discussions around the table. There's a lot that needs to change in lots of you know, places of power and discussion, and the UK is one of those places, and Spain as a whole. Let's get back to Spain and life in Spain as a black expat.
Another. Yes.
What advice would you give to the 20-year-old Daryl who was thinking about moving to Spain, or who maybe had moved to Spain? So not necessarily 20, but 20 years ago, just you were on the cusp or you just started to visit.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to the 20, you know, the Daryl of 20 years ago?
I would say be more observant.
Mm-hmm.
I think I missed a lot of things. But a lot of that will only come with experience as well. But if I'm giving my old me advice, I'd say maybe take more time on the languages. Take more time on observing cultural normalities. Not to assimilate or not to duplicate them, but just to understand them more. I think I just think I wouldn't change very much because I don't have a bad view of my life. I don't think I've done many things wrong, so there's not a lot of advice to give me.
Okay.
But I would say to people, or I just think, just take things slow. I think I definitely just tried to gorge myself too fast on everything, but it's just like it came from not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so everything was new. It was like, oh, I want to do this, I want to see this, I want to, you know. But if I look back, I don't know to really enjoy some of the things I, you know, as a first experience.
Okay.
I've gone back later and redone them. But I think if you're talking first experience, in maybe I'd say maybe slow down.
That's cool. That's good.
A bit.
I wanted to kind of just get back to your daughter. Sorry, just I'm kind of jumping all over the place, maybe because there are different things that come into my mind.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
Of a mixed race child who looks maybe Moroccan because we're in the country of Spain, but she could look many other different things if we were in a different country.
Do you think that
your daughter has experienced racism, classism? Do you feel that you have to protect your daughter here? Do you feel that you have to give your daughter lessons about kind of race relations? Do you feel that her teachers have to be taught any additional information? Do you feel that you have to shield your daughter or protect your daughter as a mixed race child, a Spanish child, but as a mixed race child of you know, Black and still, not Castilian, but Catalonian mother?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Yeah. It's a really good question. I feel like she's a skeleton. Well, I think, yeah, at some point. She's a skeleton key, you know? She's exactly what I want. She's the girl that can go anywhere, do anything, fit into anybody's environment. She can be just enough of anything to get by. And I think that's going to be fascinating for her because she's going to have what I've taught her with what she has. That's going to be brilliant. That's going to make her dangerous. I already see it. But yeah, as a father, I have to explain to her sometimes that people, like she's, I think now realizing there's a different way the world works than the way she thought, but that's only going to come with age and experience. But I don't know that it's uniquely to her being a mixed race kid. I feel like other kids have that same issue in many other ways, but just from the racial point, because that's what we're talking about. Yeah. I think she gets stereotyped sometimes, but from across the board, I think Moroccan kids and Muslim kids, if they just meet her, think she's like them. And then they realize, oh, she's not, because she doesn't think that way. She's not wired that way. Culturally, she's not built that way. She's as American as any kid could be here. She's my daughter, so all she's ever going to get is the American Black Southern flow for me, but she has no context. She does things.
Yeah, it's in isolation, that experience and
right, your perspective right.
is going to be slightly different having lived away from that country for so long.
Yeah,
as well.
But some of it is the nature versus nurture argument is something I'm always into. And I'm like, she does things. She says things. She her behaviors, her mannerisms are so hood, so Black, so Southern.
What does so hood mean?
Oh, come on. You know hood is the... She got responses. She, you know, like there's soulhood means if I gotta tell you, you don't know, is what I say to people. Because if you see it, you know what it is. It's cultural. It's like we're wired that way, we're built that way. The responses, some of the head movements, not even the whole exaggerated black, because that's character at that point. But there's things, the way she stands, the way she moves, the way she squares up on somebody when she's aggravated, like, yo, you don't learn that. Like, that is hard-coded into your DNA at this point. So I explained it to, like, you know, she says, she identifies with things, you know. It's just fun. You know, it's just really funny how it is. But yeah, I think culturally people need to learn how to do, like, for example, let's go with the most basic thing, her hair. She's still got to navigate that world, which is more complicated for her because, like, those products don't exist. They're getting there. So I go out of my way to find her black hair products or products that I think are going to be better for her. And there's way more available to her than there's ever been.
Are you able to source those products in a big city like Barcelona?
Yeah. Even here, even surprisingly, in a town that's not exactly huge, you can find stuff. Again, like I said, the world is becoming smaller.
Definitely true.
We can Amazon everything. Now, obviously, I find products that she likes more. There's stuff that we need that we found. And obviously, we went to, like, just ironically, an hour north of, you know, we're short of an hour or so short of the France border. Right, like southern Spain, so southern France, northern Catalonia.
That means it's cold where you live. That's what that means to me.
Yeah, it is.
Now it's cold.
Yes, exactly. But like we went up to like the grocery store, and then like we were in Carrefour. I don't know if you're familiar with Carrefour.
Yeah.
Carrefour. So Carrefour is a French company, right? Just for anybody to watch who doesn't know, imagine a scale down Walmart, but it's French. That's essentially what it is. I was in France, we're visiting, whatever, we're having a good time buying stuff, we go to this products, hair products, and there's a section, ethnic section, as they call it.
Wow.
And I'm like, yo, I need this, because I got dreads, like, oh, I need the butter, I'm buying everything just for me so I can keep the wig tight, right? So my daughter's like, oh, I like this. And we're trying stuff. And the stuff that worked for her was, okay, we know what we need to get. And then we went to the same store here in Barcelona. I'm like, oh, we should, because we weren't looking for it before, but it was Carrefour, right? So I was like, oh, we're just going to go to Carrefour Home and we need to get more. And then it didn't exist.
Wait,
and then that was like the first conversation for me and my daughter to be like, why? Right. So I'm like, you know, pardon, I'm looking for this. And they're just like, no, we don't carry that. I'm like, but I bought it in a, you know.
I don't like, care. Outline. And we don't know what you're talking about. It's like that.
Yeah.
Everywhere so. Is like very much a franchise mentality. Let's just say that.
It is. But again, like I said, that being said, I found other stores here, like there's in the center of Barcelona. There's several stores, right? That are like what we would call a black hair store back home, where you just go and get all your needs. There's like one, and ironically, the name of the shop is Diva. I expect to go see some, you know, big auntie in there with the, you know, whole, and it wasn't. I was like, y'all really representing a lifestyle, but I'm not mad because you got what I need. If that makes sense,
you can't kind of confuse the name of a store. with anything else, like, you know, restaurant Jamaica here or Kingston or this or that. And I'm like, oh, I'm getting excited.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, it's like it's a pizza place or a barber's or, you know, just like it's got nothing to do with, you know.
Yeah, they don't got no real oxtails. They got no jerk chicken. They don't got none of the things.
There's no branding, you know, like name goes in line with the product and, you know.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but again, that's yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Like, I think as to relate back to the question you asked me, going slow, I would have noticed these things earlier. Like, there was things that I wasn't looking for earlier that if I went back, I would be like, oh, I think I would look for this earlier. Me, I would be like, oh, how do I navigate the things that I need with the world that is? And obviously that world 20 years ago was completely different than the world here now. I mean, as children of the 80s, 90s, I'm having deja vu on a daily basis because it's all did the cycle return, right? The fashion, everything. But so much of that is urban. So much of that represents a very Black era.
Yeah, I hate the term urban. Sorry. I'm like, urban when they're talking about urban design, then that's urban.
I like that. I like that. That's interesting. That's okay. Why? I'm curious. Why?
Because it's people don't want to call, like, the term goes a spade. They don't want, they just want to, like, you know, it's like the gentrification and the playing about with things and kind of the rape is a rape. I hate the terminology of when they use other terminology, like a violation is a violation to me. And when they try to soften down things or use different terminology to make it sound like something else, make it sound less than what it is. And, you know, it's Black culture, it's European culture, it's Spanish culture, it's Italian culture.
So
it's influenced by or with, but this is where these things come from. And we have to acknowledge, we're not saying that it's not Middle Eastern culture. If we talk about hummus, let's call the thing what it is. It's influenced by other things. That's me. Sorry.
No. Like I said, this is what we're here for. That's dope. Like that. Let's unpack that. I feel like that's interesting, because I really, as much as I'm enjoying what we're saying, I'm blown away. Right, because like I would have never thought about it in that context. Right, like I would never thought of somebody. Because and then when somebody says to me that's urban, I automatically go yeah, because I know what you mean.
Because it's that, because you know what they mean, but they don't want to say what it is. They don't want to say that it's hummus from the Middle East. They want to say
But what is it though? See, that's why I'm. This is why I'm like, okay, I don't know. For better or for worse, if somebody says it's urban, I don't know that I will automatically go to Black. For me, as an American from the 90s, urban to me doesn't necessarily mean Black. Now, I'll say why. Why before just to clarify, to me urban, and it is what you're saying, urban to me is that diaspora, that gumbo mix of culture. Urban is like everything but white to me. To me personally, from my experience, right? No, I get it, but these are conversations I have with my friends from the UK, my friends from other parts of the world, because we're all responding to it in our own context and understanding. I was one of those people. I was like, how the fuck you call my music urban? Because I was like, wait, but I was like, well, you know what? It is kind of urban though. Like it does, but it doesn't just, it doesn't mean what I think they think it means.
I'm like, why aren't we playing about with Mayan terminology or, you know, kind of Sanskrit, or why aren't we playing about with like everything from all over the world? Because you're saying that it's anything that's not white. It's me. It's not like Sanskrit or, you know, or Mayan or hieroglyphics, or they're from particular places made by particular people at particular
times. I agree.
It has to be like remembered and respected and understood. And then things evolve and take on other forms and are influenced by and with the things, but so, like, pay homage to what the thing is.
So what would you say the proper, if we're talking like for music as a DJ, when you go to classification, if we're going to play the urban hour, should we say it's the Black hour? You think so? I mean, I don't know. I'm curious.
Now today, I don't know whether I'd just say it's as simple as that, because now Black music is sung by, as an example of music,
everybody,
and everybody but Black people are able to progress, be honest.
Exactly. I agree. So I have more of a problem with that than urban, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Of all the bullshit that goes around it, or we know, exactly. If you see a white person singing Black music on X Factor or The Voice or any of these shows, a white person singing like a Black person is incredible. A Black person singing like a Black person, they can't go far.
No.
All this thing about,
exactly.
You, No.
Yeah, yeah, no, we're like when Adele hit, I thought Adele was a black woman. When I first heard it, I was like, yo, that's just like a blow. And I was like, oh wow, she's a heavyset white woman from the UK. That's crazy.
It's not that what somebody looks like to me, that's the issue. It's like everybody can sing what they want to sing. Everybody can do what they want to do, what they're able to do, what they're good at doing. But for me, my issues are we can't dig up a black person, can't get as far as
Oh yeah, no,
white
totally.
person is doing black music, and it's not urban. But if a white person
Yeah.
singing like a gospel singer, or if a white person is dancing or doing hip hop or rapping or DJing or dressing or a big butt or got big lips or doing what black people do and have always done,
Right.
then they're incredible, then they're brilliant, then they're great. But if a black
Yeah, no,
person
I
being a
agree with
black
you 100.
person,
I agree with you 100%. 100%. I went to all black college in North Carolina, JCSU, historic black college. Just for, to quantify for people sometimes like my background. But me and my boy, my roommate, who I definitely want you to interview, he's not an expat, but he's just about to feel like you should talk to at some point because he has an expat mind and he's never, his brain is there. He would always tell me, yo, we can't shine our own shit. And I just like, yo, that is brilliant. I don't know if it's a better simplification than that. Like, this is what we do. We made this. But like you said, we can't get the hype off of it. If you do it, it's great. If I do it, it's whatever.
women have had big bums for forever and a day. Not cool, not good, bad, this, that, the other path, no clothes made for us, no
Yeah,
this, that. But now it's like, who doesn't want a big bum and big lips?
yeah.
But now it's like, it's okay. But it's not just, it's about the disregard for where the things come from and the hate for the other. It's more about that for me. It's the
So
hate
I
of
agree. I agree. So
what it is.
let me ask you this then. So if we're seeing everything that we do come into light now, to me that means it was always the good thing. Like maybe, and this is my opinion, right? Like maybe what we're seeing is the shredding of that hypocrisy or that gatekeeper mentality. Cause they were like, yo, this is dope. I want a big booty. You know what I mean? Like this mentality is like y'all been taught it was wrong for years, but maybe now you're realizing it's not. I don't know which one it is. I'm curious as from a person. I'm always curious.
But what is the question that you're asking me? If you are
And
asking
my
me, I'm
question,
making a
yeah,
statement, I'm not sure.
yes. I'm asking a question is, do you think that is bad that they're finally coming around to it, or would you rather keep it for us?
Don't know whether like I have a question of either or for an answer. What I do know and believe, no. And what we know is nothing. Because we know nothing. If you know nothing. Is that the getting me into some waters that I don't really like expose myself in this way at all, yo.
Look, I wait for you to come on my podcast and then we can do that.
The powers that be allow what they want to allow when they want to allow it to happen.
Right.
For example, it's like ticking boxes in some regards, because there's a bit of noise over there that will allow that to happen, will
Right.
allow this one to get through. That one's been saying this for 60 years, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years. We don't want to hear that one, that story, that problem, that thing. For example, Viola Davis just got the EGOT, but Viola Davis had to say that I didn't get the EGOT, but I should have gotten the EGOT because I did this better, this more than. But she had to come out and say it, them to say, you deserve it, and then to get it.
Yeah.
I got the EGOT. It's
Right,
like,
right.
if she hadn't have pulled it like years ago, then the powers that be wouldn't be saying, here's the EGOT, the carrot,
Yeah.
go
I'm
away and
with you.
shut up.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
It's the powers that be that control systems that aren't about to let things change. So we have to be honest about the way in which the world works. And they will give the carrots as they see fit, when they see fit, who they see fit. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And the minute that they don't see you fit, receive that carrot, is the minute that it changes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I just think universally, and I say that culturally here, living in a metropolitan European city as a big black man from the South, I feel like it's the dying breath of all the things we hate. I think we're in a really interesting point of view, and I say this as a father of a mixed kid, as I guess the overall bow around my conversation is, we're standing in a place in time where if we look back, we're going to go, this was so fucked up. This was really terrible. We lived through X, Y, Z. Now we're the hype. Now this is amazing. But if we look the other way in 20 years, what does that look like? And I think it's really important as the people in the middle right now to decide what that next 20 years looks like. Because for me to be like, I say this because of my previous experience right now, where I felt like somebody didn't like this, mm-hmm. and I was achieving, I was about to get all the rewards, I was getting all the love, and they couldn't stand it, right? So people went out of their way to make sure I had to be removed from the throne. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is it because I was bad at what I was doing? Is it because I'm black? What? And I realized that none of that matters, right? At the end of the day, I go, okay, cool. Because now something has happened. I held it down for X amount of time. Everybody I dealt with realized somebody that looks like me, that is me, can do the things they needed getting done. And they realized that when I was removed, makes people ask questions. Doesn't matter.
Not for long enough, but continue.
Maybe not the right
questions.
No, maybe not the right question. And maybe it's not even racial. Maybe it's not even a racial thing at the end of the day.
It's about kind of like, I understand that you're talking about things from an optimistic perspective, and we have to have optimism, and we have to have like faith, and we have to have belief, and we have to like all good things.
I get it. But the point is that I'm making, that I am obviously the overly optimistic person, always. I'm always that ray of sunshine that, you know, I'm that guy. But I really honestly believe that these moments we're seeing right now are the dying lights of all the things that we hate. Now, they're going to fight hard. They're going to come at us with everything they got. The racist, the misogynist, the all the things right now. We see it more because they got to. They got to throw everything they got at us right now because mm-hmm. it's losing. They're losing their hold on things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people go, oh, no, it's worse than it ever has been. Like, well, it has to be. It has to be worse than it's ever been. Because if not, how do we get to the next place? I don't know that it works any other way, historically speaking.
What I'm going to say is that the obvious hate and the obvious there's a term that I want to use but I can't think of it. The obvious hate and the obvious kind of like holding us back is part of what I want to say has been removed on a kind of very superficial level. That's one thing. But at the same time, for me, the shift of the hatred and the kind of the holding people back and down just kind of moved a little bit to the left. So now it's like
is
kind of the underdog for their time to come, because it's the cycle of life. It's what happens because mm-hmm. everything's cyclical.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of like, it's a bit of tunnel vision, and all the people over there and all the people over there that don't have or that are going or that like don't speak up loud enough or that don't fight loud enough or that are making music or we don't care about, well.
Yeah. But But do you think, I agree with you completely, but what I'm saying is, in light of the exactly to what you're saying, those moments is giving energy to young people right now to say, hey, we can get out there. And it's going to be harder for people to hold them back, I think.
I agree with you, but again, Black culture has always been at the forefront of that in terms of the last 50, 60 years. And that gives light to, for example, Indigenous Americans, Indigenous Australians to be rapping. And I'm not knocking about the rapping, but rapping in their own tongue about their own issues, about their own problems. And that's where it gives rise to, and that's where it gives power to the others to feel that they are empowered to start making changes. But there are so many that need to be made. There are so many spaces that don't have a voice, don't have any power, that are oppressed, that people don't care about. Heartbreaking,
It
heartbreaking.
is. It is. I agree.
So
I
our
agree.
culture's fashionable right now. Freaking music's fashionable right now.
Right. It's always been fashionable. It's always been fashionable. Always. Since the beginning of
I'm not
music.
disputing that, but I'm talking about mainstream fashionable, as in
Yeah.
acceptable, then everyone wants to jump on it, as in it being cool. But the bigger questions and the wider issues.
No, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's a ripple effect. We just got to keep throwing rocks in the pond till the ripples become waves. Like that's just, that's just the mentality that it's gonna have to be. But like, if you go back to like, and I say this, I talk to my daughter about it all the time. It's like you look at other things that people really enjoy. Like Black culture has been at the forefront of everything, and they've just always stole from us. Always, always. Since the history of time. But at the same time, we got to keep producing so we can do more. Like you said, while we letting them shine on what we do, they're only trying to shine them because they know that it's right. They want to
No,
get on it.
but my point there, I don't know whether things were like a bit confusing in terms of what I said. I think it's good that Native American rapping and promoting their own culture, for example, and their dress and their language and all the rest of it, and using hip hop as a tool to do that, but in their own tongue. Not to say that they don't or they do have to bring light to the issues that are within their culture, but I think that we're allowed to get through at the moment and be fashionable and be acceptable and make it, some of us and some not, and depend upon where you are and how dark or how light or how big or how fat or how straight or not or where you are. But it's just an unjust world we live in, is more the point. And there are just lots and lots and lots of people suffering. And I know that they say that we're living in the best times and it's the safest, time that we've ever lived as human beings, and the
That ain't saying a lot, but yeah.
fewest amount of wars and this and that and this and that. But it's just, we see more, we're exposed to more, so we know more. And if we know more, then we should be doing better.
I
Kind of
agree.
what I want to say.
No, I agree. I agree. This is brilliant. I think this is the most honest, brilliant conversation I've had in a while, and I'm super happy to be a part of it. I hope we have more. I don't know. I think it's really crazy where we are as a people, as Europeans or people living outside of America as a worldwide, I think we got to get into more positions of power. Like we got to be able to open the door and be our own gatekeepers.
Definitely.
I don't know how we get there. That's my question. What do we do? How do we get there?
A whole bigger question, but talking about things, exposing what's going on, and being honest about our realities, I think is really important. Leaving a legacy for me is really important because, your journey is important to the next generation coming up. My journey, the same thing again, and all the rest of it. So that's part of it, because then the stories can't be changed or erased or, interpreted in a different way if we don't leave those legacies of our own. So,
Absolutely.
ensuring
Absolutely.
that we do that, because maybe it will come for our time, maybe not. Maybe we can open the doors bit by bit by bit for the next generation to come up, as painful as that sounds, but that's
Yeah.
also part of life as well.
Let me ask you one last question, because I know I probably ran over my time that we were supposed to have
Look
allotted.
2 hours in, but let's go.
All right, so I am, as an American, was thrown by this, and I'm still getting used to it here, and I'm of a mixed opinion. When looking for a job, people here put their pictures on their resume, or CV as they call it here. That to me is wildly crazy. But I'm now going, okay, what does this mean? And I've got a thought, and you can tell me if I'm crazy or your opinion of it. At first I did not want to put my picture on my resume. I thought that was just unnecessary. It's like, why does it matter what I look like? Blah, blah, blah. Now, I've also, in the experience, showed up to a job, like I said earlier, but like, oh, this is not who we expected to be based on the person. So you get this. So at least now my mentality is, well, at least if my picture's on the resume and they choose you for the position, you should not get that racist response because they knew what they were hiring. So do you think there's a validity to that, or does it make a difference? I guess is the question I'm asking you in Europe, because this is new to me.
So it's illegal in the UK to give that type of information because there are protective laws in the UK that say that you can't ask people their age, you can't ask people, you know, you can't hire people on what they look like. So we have those protections in the UK. They kind of exist in Spain. So you probably do know or don't know.
Hmm.
But what's legal and what happens are two different things. And there's no recourse if a company hires you because they don't like the way that you look, or they do like the way that you look. There's no recourse. Yeah. There's nowhere to go with it because no one cares.
Yeah, because it's, you see it more if you look at LinkedIn now, and every job profile, there's this whole paragraph now. We get equal opportunity. We want to give everybody a chance. And okay, you've noted it. Fine.
Yeah. Because there's a law that says that we should be doing this. The reality is, they just will ask you for a picture. If they like the way you look, then you will be hired. Maybe you can do the job as well. But it's not fair for the people that are making the decisions don't like the way that they look. For example, I know when I wear my wig, this wig in particular, I turn heads, I see white Spanish guys I'm talking about, looking at me, and they look at me, I'm attractive, they find me attractive. I'm a woman, I understand that. I'm a queer woman, but I understand that and I can feel it. When I wear my headscarf, I can feel that I don't get that same response. I don't see heads turning when I'm on the street. So I know that my parents did a good job, and this is not me being vain, but I know that I look attractive to the world. My face is attractive to the world.
Right.
It's fine for me to put a picture on because judgment on the whole, if I put my wig on, and this is the wig that I use for interviews, this is the wig that I use. I mean, we can do this.
It's a tool. I get you.
So I use for interviews, I use for my CV, but on the job, I'm wearing a headscarf and I'm looking very different. So I know that we have to then play within those games and play that role because Black women know that they want to see us looking a particular way, that we become acceptable to their eyes.
Yes.
I, you know, have a picture of me with a bar led or with dreadlocks or with a headscarf, then there's a different perception, not about my ability to do the job or not. It's about what I look like. And so the days should never have been and should be gone where it's like what you look like is what's important here, unless it's a customer-facing job and you've got five eyes.
Right.
And it's fine when you know that you're acceptable to the world, because I know how to play that. But I'm not dark skin, and I'm not like a particular way. And I'm not saying that dark skin is ugly, but what I'm saying is the world perceives what is beautiful, what is attractive, what isn't attractive. And so I can play about with this, so it's fine for me. Yeah. But not everyone's able to do that. And then the judgment of what is acceptable, what is attractive and what isn't. And that's where there are problems with it. And the problem lies in, can you do the job or not?
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be sat behind a computer, you know, with a headset on or doing something like video editing.
Exactly.
Like, people don't need to see you. It's not a customer-facing job. You don't need that model hiring those qualities. They're hiring you. Can you speak five languages? Can you do this? Are you the quickest? Are you the fastest? Are you intelligent? You know. No. What do you like? We don't think your luck will, and that's the issue with Spain at the whole. It's still quite conservative.
I agree. Yes.
If someone's got tattoos or whatever, then they, you know, won't be chosen for a job or looks a particular way. And they can ask, what's your date of birth? Send a picture.
None done. Yeah.
Not interesting.
This is the one thing I think that needs to be fixed. I'm still, like I said, I don't know how I feel about all of that at this particular moment. I get all the same as like, you know. And again, back to my daughter, there's days like she wants to straighten her hair. And then she feels a certain way when she has her hair. She acts a certain way when her hair is straight versus when she's wearing her hair naturally and curly, or she wants to have it up. She doesn't want to show
because
it.
She knows that the world responds to her in a different way. So that's why she acts in a different way. It makes her feel different. And it's not just like I've got my hair in a different way. Yeah, that's part of it. But the world interacts with her in a different way. So we're all part of that.
Yeah, exactly. This is the thing, because like I said, I'm wearing my scarf now. I wear bandanas all the time. I have my hair is tied up. I have very long like dreads, and you know, again, like I said, when you're 6'2", 300 pounds, you're a big black man with dreads. There's a certain stigmata around that look before you ever get in the door, and I don't think that can ever shed that. I'll never not be that guy in somebody's mind. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do to change what somebody's expectation is going to be of me.
That's the thing about being a woman, that we can play about with the shit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, like to our advantage.
I just think it's interesting. That's all. I just from a job point of view, you know, like I said, I just because I look around sometimes and I go, even when I look around at the jobs, and if there's somebody black, they don't look like me. You know.
But it's a thing of everybody judged in the same way. That's what it should come down to. If we're judging on pictures, because you can be maybe ugly and Spanish, stupid and Spanish, dumb and Spanish, and get the job. But can you be the other and still get the job? And that's what it comes down to.
I agree. And so it's crazy.
If we're all 5'2" and ugly and crap, and we're all judged on our merits the same way, then that's cool.
Yeah.
If we want a job for a receptionist in 5 languages, but you choose the person that looks a particular way and can speak to, what is it that you want, and what is it that you're saying, and what is
right,
and where do we go from there?
Yeah, for sure.
Right, we are going to come to a close today.
All right.
Is there anything that you would like to say in breve? Anything you'd like to say to our listeners and our viewers?
Thank you for indulging in the time to listen to this nonsense of mine rambling in my points of view, which may or may not be relative to anybody anywhere ever, but it's dope to have these conversations, and I implore everybody to continue to have conversations with everybody about everything always. I hope I get to come back and have another long-winded conversation with you about something else or more of this. Either way, I'm all down.
I want to say thank you very much for your time, your energy, your honesty, your openness. It's been absolutely fabulous. We have a talk and then some, which is cool, which is great. I am Jeanette, me, the Colombian Catwoman. So please subscribe and listen to the channel. And we have other episodes of Black Expats in Spain. We're sharing our stories. We are here leaving a legacy of our experience here in the country we call Spain. If you are interested in Spanish lessons, please reach out to me, jce101@hotmail.co.uk. Subscribe to the channel, The Colombian Catwoman. So this series is Black Expats in Spain. Is there anywhere that you can be contacted should people want you for work, for anything that you do? Is there anything, any contact details?
I'm generally available at dkestudios@gmail.com. I'm social media all over the place, but if you look for DKE Studios, you'll generally find me.
Okay, thank you very much, Darren, for your time today.
Thank you.
Say over and out from me.
Salute,
Catwoman. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Take care.